Are you feeling it? Why do you look so dark? I know I've gone, it's terrible to call to back during this period. But we thought that it's very much important for us to go through the process quite early, because if we don't make it publicly, it's going to affect our program in the next term. I know the National Commission is in a hurry to understand about their own future. So I needed to make sure that the legislation gets opened up. The military command is one of the things that they're going to talk about. I've not understood the dynamics that are involved there, but you are going to have a sense of why they want us to do some amendments. The reserve force and the contractual obligations that is being arranged, those are the three amendments that have been made within the amendment bill that is being put in front of us. We have outlined a program that I would like mainly to distribute as much as you can amongst members. But it's going to be important for you to follow the program itself. If we can, we would love that by the first week of August, we should be having the process coming back to Parliament, and so that you could be able to endorse them and finish up the process. Where you don't understand, as a journalist, how much you understand about rearranging of a military command, I will attempt to explain what is in front of us by law. But also, I know General Olenis is one of those that has ever assisted us into putting together the creation of a command, military command. So the experiences that are here are quite vast. To be able to give a reflection on that type of formation, that why it is necessary for itself to be reflected upon and changes to be made. I know some of our own members, Colonel Bald and others, have asked for apologies. They can't make it to here, but we will proceed. So I'm really welcoming you in the good spirit of the FIFA World Cup. You all can see South Africans are behind Bafana Bafana, and we are all behind them to make sure that we have a successful tournament. And I know the SNDF is ready. Many, they are ready. I know that they've been commenting and say they're not ready, but it's always you and me. But this time I'm winning. And how are you, my honorable members? Fine. Good morning, honorable members. How are you? I was starting to send out some SNDF people to look for you. That Olomide wanted to harass me. There is a program. I wanted to speculate the program. We have the program in front of you, across board. Honorable members, also the commission, also the department, and some of the media people, so that you could have a sense of how to want to run this process. You are very good at pinpointing how do we consult the broad public. I always want to make sure that you feel comfortable that to be accommodated. The hearings, today we are having and the open process of us being taken through by the Secretary of Defense and the legal department, and the amendments that are being made in relation to military command. We start with that one. And is that right, Sergeant Jika? We start with the military command. And then we come with the reserve force, and then after that we deal with the National Commission. Now, I would like members and everybody to really listen quite, because these are very important amendments that have been made in relation to the legislation that is in front of us. And then the only after 2 weeks of allowing for public here, I mean for the public to apply and the public to tell us their different views, on the 20th of July we'll be back in Parliament. And then it means we'll be having our hearing for the first time, not the hearing on justice, but we'll be taking a briefing from the reserve force itself. That will be General Anderson, yes. We'll be taking from you to tell us exactly, taking us through why do you think that contract or that amendment is quite necessary. And then we'll be taking the National Defense Commission, the interim one. We had you on the 21st of July. We wanted to have a full, today I know you are on weather to come and see, but we wanted to take you at full blast. Would like also to appeal to the ministry to give us the report, if you can agree. Would like you to see if you have presented this party that report, take them out, but give us essentially the report. It's about two reports now that has been compiled by the National Commission. Would like you to give us a sense of that report so that we could be able to see what other reasons that have been provided for you to say to us that the National Commission should be constituted in the manner that they are saying. We would be motivated in a more bigger way by the report that we have constructed. It's not in front of us today, David, but definitely so. I'm asking now, and I'm speaking to the Secretary of Defense, that before we go to on the 21st of July, during this period of hearing, if we could be given the copy so that I can distribute it to all members, so that you can read and see exactly what is going on. No, no, be patient. I'll come back to you, my brother. I know you. And then on the 22nd of July, we would want to have gone through all the public, the public response and see exactly what is going on there. And have a workshop where our researchers would have been able to prepare us and have gone through the and compiled exactly what is the public saying about those amendments and would be going them through with the members themselves. So it's really with the members that are filling up period. But also there's a necessary development that we need to prepare ourselves. And this is about the money bill. The money bill, we would have to prepare ourselves because we have to come to budget recommendations before the medium term. This is what is called the BRRR. Now we have made a promise and a commitment. Tatutolo, members of parliament, I want to see them on this side. You'll end up on the wrong side there. He's not a member of parliament today. Leave him alone there. Let me see you on this side. On the 22nd, we want to do the BRRR. The BRRR is very much important because if you deal with the money bill, it means that during that period, we need to make recommendation to the Treasury before the Treasury comes back with the medium term. Now, all of us would have to apply our mind. It's dependent on Secretary of Defense designate on the type of report that you would have prepared and be able to motivate that why do you need extra money for the border. We have made the commitment as members of parliament that we would want to lobby parliamentarians and would want to lobby for that portion of the amount that was not budgeted for. So through the BRRR, we could be able to put up our motivation. But if we are united and we are all understanding the views and the situation that has happened in the border, we'll be able to convince National Treasury. But I must say so, people in the appropriation would prefer you to also resolve the issues that we have with the offer. So that they don't want to give money where they think there could be some reservation and some criticism around that. But also, if we finish the bill quite at the end of that, we would want to know the reason. If we have got convincing reasons, we have to start working towards making sure that the National Commission, if it comes into place, it does get some money. It doesn't just get. We also have to make sure that the military veterans do get some money. So the BRRR is one period in Parliament that is very crucial for members of parliament to apply their mind that is there a need for us to fight for the budget of the defense force. Do we see gaps or we don't see gaps? That is the biggest challenge. And then from the 27th to the 29th, we'll be having public hearings. Different members of the public would have some comments to make about the bill, would be allowed to come and make their different comments. We'll invite them. We know for a matter of fact that those who are for are able to come to Parliament and present. Maybe the committee would have to be a little bit innovative in how it will help those that wouldn't be able to have the potential of coming down. But that will lead to the broader Parliament to assist us to invite as many people as we can. So I'll leave the program just up until the 29th. And then on the 3rd of August, we're definitely coming back to finish up the hearing. And then after we're finishing up the hearing, then the committee, I would expect members of different parties to reflect on what is the engagement of their own parties and their different parties. And then we come back and have to start finalizing and going towards the decision. And then we'll take committee members through clause by clause and make sure that right through that period, everybody has got the sense of exactly what are those amendments. because I'm a mentor for all of us. Throughout that period, Mr. Galana knows that the department is always represented with the Secretary of Defense, so that we can all be making sure that everything is taking place. That's how the program is, members. That's how your program is going to be. Today what is going to happen exactly is we will take the first presentation from the Secretary of Defense, designate to just take and do some opening remarks. And after she has done that, we'll give an opportunity to both the legal people, and we will give that the General Mukwege to comment about the military command, and then I'll allow members of parliament to start posing their questions. If you don't talk too much, if you go on very well, if you go up until 12 o'clock, and then you can release each other so that you can all go and prepare for our soccer, for the soccer match tomorrow. But always like that, we are always privileged to ask your questions, but be time conscious that we have to go and watch soccer tomorrow. I actually asked members, I had forgotten that the opening of the FIFA World Cup tomorrow. But I really want to apologize for that, but it's always in the interest of all of us, the South Africans, that we also do some little bit of work so that we could be able to continue the work that is in front of us. These bills are very urgent in the name of the SNDF or the ministry itself. The ministry would have loved to have come today to apologize. They're having a small cabinet committee that deals with security. She has to do the presentation around the military veterans into that particular committee. It's an important task. Well, we've been waiting for the military veterans to come in front of us, but their submission to cabinet, they have not been able to meet it. So both herself and the deputy president, I mean deputy minister, have really apologized. They've been trying to juggle their program, but it's not been able to fit in. She doesn't want to come and see what is the views of the members of parliament. If there's anything, I saw you were raising your hand, Elias David. Was there something that you wanted to say?
Chair, I just...
Marima Mustela, how are you? I didn't see you coming in.
Chair, the intervention I wanted to make was at the time that you were talking about the Interim National Defence Force Service Commission's reports. I absolutely support your view that before we get busy with legislating in respect of this bill, we do need to see the two interim reports produced by the Commission. And just so all the facts are before this committee, I have some weeks ago applied for copies of those reports using the PIA Act, the Access to Information Act. And I think it's a great tragedy that it had to get to that. But I just wanted to let you know that I have applied for those reports in terms of the PIA Act. I've not yet heard from the department.
Yes, I won't represent the department now. I'll allow the parliamentary processes that I represent to take it through. So I have asked the ministry now, through the Secretary of Defense, that as we start the process, we'd like to have access to those reports so that I can distribute them widely. And I just want to appeal to all members. I know some of them, their constituency offices are not up and running. But give any address and phone number that mainly can make use of during this research, so that any other information that comes in front of us can be distributed to all members. I'll really appeal for that.
Just to say, I think David was jumping the gun. We are all waiting for that report. You don't have to apply for a report as an individual. We are expecting that report, first of all, to be presented to this committee. You see, I know you have a right to do that, but I think we're jumping the gun. We have waited for the report. We are all waiting for the report to come in first, and so on and so forth.
Okay. Thank you. I allow the veteran to express his own point of view, David. He's a veteran in the community, he's a veteran in the whole movement, but let's give him the opportunity. That process is going to take place. I know the Secretary designate is looking into that. Can I allow you, ma'am, to do the introduction, opening remarks, and then our legal department will talk before the other people. Okay.
Honorable Chairperson and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee in Defense, thank you very much for this opportunity, for inviting us to come and present to you the Defense Amendment. May I start, Chairperson, by acknowledging the presence of the Chairperson of the Interim National Defense Force Service Commission, the Honorable Judge Priscilla, together with the commissioners who have joined us here today. We understand they are here in observer status, but we would like to thank them for being here today. Chairperson, I am accompanied by General Matanzima, the Acting Secretary of Defense. He should confirm my position here as the Secretary of Defense Designate. Also, the General Mugwebi, who is acting Chief of SANDF on behalf of General Ngwenya, General Anderson of the Reserve Force. We are also accompanied by the head of the Ministry of Services, the state law advisors, and other colleagues who are here with us today. We'll start, Chairperson, by thanking you, the committee, for really agreeing to the call-up to take special time to come back and deal with this piece of legislation on our behalf, and I'd like to thank you for that. The bill that is before us, as we will introduce it today, Chairperson, clearly deals with the three aspects you've outlined, the issue of the reserve force, the establishment of the service commission, and the definition of the military command. In relation to the issue of the service commission, it seeks to establish a permanent service commission which will advise the Minister of Defense on improvements of service conditions of members of the Defense Force. It also seeks to establish new arrangements so that we don't depend on the solely largely dysfunctional bargaining process of the Military Bargaining Council as the only mechanism towards achieving improved service conditions and service benefits. But it principally seeks to sever the relations we have with the Public Service Commission and establish a new commission, a separate service commission that reflects and caters for the unique nature of the Defense Force. It seeks to sever the relations with the Public Service Commission totally. It is also seeking to establish a commission with the same authority, power, and similar arrangements as the Public Service Commission, as we indicate those that is dedicated to a defense force and operates solely for the purposes of matters relating to the defense force. Chairperson, in the presentation, we will outline the detail of the bill. We will indicate the procedures for the appointment of the commission. We will also indicate the roles and responsibilities of the president and the minister in the process of appointment, the lifetime, and the functions of the commission. In the presentation, that detail will be provided. Chair, there are, however, if I may indicate at this point, just coming from outside of the department, since the tabling of the bill, a number of additional proposed amendments we'll be making in this process. And they arise out of matters that have come to our attention after the tabling. And we will be submitting them in the normal process as we proceed. Firstly, Chair, is the issue relating to the responsibility of the President versus that of the Minister. The Minister had expressed a view clearly emanating from the Cabinet discussion that had approved this particular bill, reflecting an overemphasis on the responsibilities of the President. She had expressed a request that we need to tone that down as Cabinet had recommended. But I think what happened in the amendment is a certain level of overzealousness to the extent that the name of the President was completely eliminated from the bill. Chair, we would like to confirm that the policy intent is simply to allow the President to be responsible for the functions of appointment of the Commission.
Is that, is that in relation to the military command?
No, Chair, it's in relation to the Commission.
To the Commission?
Yes, sir. And the responsibilities around only the appointment would reside with the President, and the other responsibilities in relation to the Commission would be assigned to the Minister. And that is the policy intent. So that, in fact, in comparison to the Public Service Commission, it has equal status, which is currently prescribed by the Constitution and appointed by the President of the Republic. The second, Chair, would be a matter relating to reference in the bill, particularly in Section 62B7, of reference to the Public Service Commission. And because of this decision about severing the relations and clearly establishing a separate commission, we would be proposing deletion of that particular clause in order to effect that policy intent. The third issue, Chair, which is really a minor issue, would be through yourselves, and we will make reference ourselves to the relevant authorities to seek a consequential amendment on the Public Service Act itself, which continues to refer to the services under current arrangements. But once this is enacted, the obvious step would be for the Public Service Act to be amended so that services are excluded from the definitions of the Public Service Act. Chair, the next issue would be the issue of the military command, which I will ask General Mkwebi in his capacity of acting chief of assembly of the military. And that's a definition of military command. He will deal with that detail. Chair, there might also be a matter which we can deal with in the detail, which arises out of the demilitarization process in relation to financial functionaries, which General Matanzima may speak to as we finish our presentation. Chair, thank you very much. May I then ask the advocate, Njigela, to proceed with the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. We'll give you first and then the rest will follow up. You do the opening presentation. You comment after yes, I'll give both the servant, Dr. Matanzima, to give a comment. We'll also have to allow understanding. Captain Mlangeni, this is the general of the Reserve Force. That I wanted to know if the Reserve Force is in existence. I needed to clarify that before I get fired. So I will then give you an opportunity now and then, if there are issues of clarity, for you to help us clarify how the institution is functioning. Okay. Can I start with you from the legal division?
Thank you very much.
Okay, can I just want to make sure? Generally, do you have the bill in front of you? You don't have. Can you please make sure that they get the bill? I also wanted to thank you for really taking time out of your busy schedule to come and look at whatever the committee is doing. Thank you very much. Can I also make sure that you do have the presentation? Ask any information you are looking for from Mandy. Mandy, can you look up for the internet? Make sure that they get anything that they are looking for. Not the private information, but give them enough information. That is public knowledge. Yeah. I don't want them to get it from David. They must get it from me. Am I correct? Yes. Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think that has already done my entire presentation. but I will try and just put emphasis on some of the things you may not have. Chair, obviously, the aim of the presentation is to... Chair, the aim of the presentation is obviously to brief the committee on the Defense Amendment Bill that was tabled by the Minister of Defense. And I think principally the amendment bill deals with the obligation to serve for the members of the reserve force, the establishment of the Defence Force Service Commission, and I think the other issues that the Prime Minister already referred to, the issue of the military command, which the department wants to propose. We just set out the scope of the issues we want to deal with. We'll obviously start with the issue of the obligation to serve for reserve force members, give a background, set out the policy team, the legal position, and the proposal we are making in the bill. Then we deal with the Defence Force Service Commission. Again, we'll give you a background, policy team, legislative proposal that we are making. And Chair, we'll just take you through some of the provisions in the bill, not of the entire bill. Starting with the reserve force, Chair,
What about the military command?
And the military command, yes.
Do you have some information?
I just have one slide. Yes.
Okay.
But I think the general will be better to speak to answer that.
Okay.
The background, Chair, to the Reserve Force Council, I mean the Reserve Force obligation to serve. I think, Chair, as a member of the previous committee, you will recall that this matter is not serving before the committee for the first time. In 2007-2008, a bill was tabled before Parliament seeking to create exactly this obligation to serve, but the bill was later withdrawn for reasons relating to the issues of Section 55. But we have just revised the proposal in table here, Chair. And the background really has to do with the current state of affairs in the Defence Force. Members of the Reserve Force are currently serving on a voluntary basis and render services in terms of a contracted or a contracted period. But over and above the contracted period, Chair, is that whenever there is a need for a defense force to call up the members, the defense force is entirely dependent upon the willingness of the members to serve. There is no mechanism in law to compel them to serve unless there is an armed conflict that is going on. So the exception to that voluntarism is the issue of a state of national defense, and at the time of war. So it means even if you wanted to call them up for training, you have no means and legislative basis to do that, unless they voluntarily make themselves available. So this is a matter which is a concern for the Defence Force, and it is difficult to plan for the Defence Force, more especially the Reserve Force, where there is no certainty as to the availability of the members of the Reserve Force. As we indicate, Chair, this makes it extremely difficult for defence planners to plan and allocate resources as the availability of Reserve Force members is not certain or guaranteed. And we just indicate here what I've already indicated, that the bill was previously tabled proposing exactly the same changes to the Defence Act. But for reasons that are not related to this proposal, it was withdrawn by the then Minister. And this concern is more relevant, Chair, if one considers the ever-expanding mandate of the Defence Force and the demands on the Defence Force relating to peacekeeping throughout Africa and the shrinking budget. So the Reserve Force is seen as a force multiplier that will enable us, where we are stretched, to be able to call up on the capacity that is there in the Reserve Force to meet the needs of the country. Now, Chair, the legal position as it stands in terms of the Defence Act, our analysis reveals that there is nothing in the law that makes the service of the Reserve Force compulsory. So they have to be willing to serve when and when required. In law, you cannot force them to serve unless there is a state of national defence or a time of war or a state of national mobilisation by the President. It has been argued that the voluntary nature of the service in the Reserve Force is a contractual arrangement and therefore does not warrant the intervention of the legislature. However, if the Reserve Force is to serve as a force multiplier, it is critical that the Reserve Force members are compelled to serve when required by the SANDF, both for training and for operation. Certainty requires that a matter of service in the Defence Force should not be left to the whims of an individual but to legislation, and this approach will eliminate any contractual dispute with regard to the current existing situation. So basically, Chair, what we are proposing here is it is the view of the DOD that Reserve Force members should be obliged to serve during peacetime under certain circumstances. And what we have in mind is where there is threat to life, health, or property, to ensure provision of essential services, support to other State Department, including support for purposes of socio-economic assistance, and to effect national border control, which is what the Defence Force is currently involved in. And under the current legislation, there is no mechanism to utilize them unless they volunteer their time to serve in this country. So that is the loop we're trying to close, Chair. The bill, Chair, like I indicated, proposes that we create an obligation for members of the reserve force. In other words, voluntarism will only end at the time that the person enlists with the reserve force. Once you are enlisted, the defense force can call you up when it needs you, either for border control, socio-economic assessment, or any other matter, including training, because we cannot deploy the reserve force members unless we have prepared them for service. So training on its own is a matter that should be regulated to ensure that when we need them for training, we are able to call on them and they should be able to make their time available. And to enforce this, shall we also create an offense for failure to comply with the call-up. In other words, the person will be issued with a call-up notice which sets the time, the place where a member must report. Any member who disregards that is subject to penalty, and that penalty is up to a maximum of a year. Chair, moving on to the issue of the Defence Force Service Commission. Chair, again, you will remember in the bill that was tabled in 2008, there was a proposal that was made at the time for the establishment of what at the time we called the Table Blue Board. Now, the proposal with regard to the Defence Force Service Commission is closely related to that from a policy point of view. The current situation is that, Chair, the Defence Force as of today is solely dependent on the bargaining process through Chapter 20 of the General Regulation. So all the issues are set out in Section 13, Regulation 13 of Chapter 20, which set out all the issues that should be bargained between the employer and the military trade union. But the reality on the ground is that that process has been dysfunctional for the past 10 years. And that is the only mechanism we have, and it has resulted in a situation where most of the improvement of conditions within the Defence Force, we have been depending on what the public service decides to extend to its members, and it was just being incorporated for members of the Defence Force, a situation which has proved to be quite unsatisfactory for the members of the Defence Force, given the unique nature of the service. So the proposal really seeks to close that loop, Chair, to say we need to have a structure that will cater for the specific needs of the Defence Force and to look at the unique circumstances of service in the Defence Force. And I think there has been a wider acknowledgement, Chair, that the nature of the relationship that members of the Defence Force have with the military is a unique one. And therefore, there should be a special mechanism to cater for those needs. To address the vacuum created by this situation, the MOD and military veteran appointed an interim National Defence Force Service Commission with the following terms of reference. Amongst other chairs, it's supposed to advise and make recommendations on a unique service dispensation outside the ambit of the public service. And we emphasize that, Chair, outside the ambit of the public service. To advise on the regulatory framework for the unique service dispensation and to investigate and provide advice on remuneration and conditions of service of the SANDF. The Interim National Defence Force continues to execute this function pending the establishment of the Permanent Commission, which is proposed in the bill. Chair, we just recap that in order to relieve the SANDF from this, the bill proposes the establishment of an independent Defence Force Service Commission to render expert advice in respect of improvement of conditions for members of the SANDF. This will emulate various international and national statutory bodies with a similar role and function. And as an example, the Public Service Commission, which the Secretary of the Designate has already mentioned that. Within the public service dispensation, there is a commission that looks after the needs of the public service. So we are creating a parallel body that is specific for the Defence Force, and that will look at the unique nature of the Defence Force and see what kind of arrangement should be made for the Defence Force. Now, Chair, I will take you just through some of the provisions within the Act of the Bill itself. Firstly, we deal with the issue of the establishment. The Bill establishes the Commission, and you will see in the proposal that you have, Chair, it indicates a number of between 8 and 10. Now there is an issue as to whether the number should be 10 or should be 12, but it's an issue that will be included in the proposal that the designated has already alluded to. There is a draft document which we will introduce and leave with the Chair for your consideration. The Minister, in terms of the current proposal, designates the Chairperson and the Deputy Chair. That's the proposal before you, like it. But again, the cabinet has already indicated that they're thinking that if you need a dispensation that is equal in status and clout to that of the Public Service Commission, maybe the right way to go about it is to pitch it at the level of the President, again, which is a proposal that we are tabling to this committee. The functions of the committee chair are, there's quite a lot of them, but I will just go through some of them. The commission is empowered in terms of the bill on an annual basis to make recommendations to the minister on the improvement of salaries and service benefits of the members, to make recommendations to the minister on policies in respect of conditions of service, and to make recommendations with regard to the promotion of measures and standards to ensure effective and efficient implementation of policies, and to make recommendations in that regard. The method of appointment, sir, we have looked at a model that will enable the minister to appoint the commission to give it a sense of independence from the administration of the Defence Force. So what we propose, sir, is that there should be an invitation of nomination in the same way that it was done with regard to the National Planning Commission, in the same way that is done in respect of the Public Service Commission. So you put an advertisement in the national newspapers and the government gazette for nominations. The minister must establish a nomination committee which will look at all the nominations, do a shortlist, and make recommendations for appointments. The minister will then make an appointment from the recommended list by the nomination commission and must publish the names of the appointed commissioners within a period of 30 days in the government gazette. Commissioners may be appointed either on a part-time basis or on a full-time basis, and may be reappointed but for one more term. Then, shall we just take you again to the intervention by the minister? Inasmuch as we create a sense of independence, but we make provision for circumstances where the commission has not been able to discharge its functions efficiently and effectively, that the minister may make certain interventions to correct. And this empowers the minister in certain instances to issue directives where the commission has failed to discharge its function efficiently and effectively. And he must afford the commission the opportunity to make submission prior to her taking any final decision as to the status of that commission. If she is still not satisfied with regard to the submissions they have made, she may appoint an administrator to take over one or more of the functions until they have been able to correct whatever she was not happy with. Chair, just briefly on the issue of the military command, and General Ngwebu will then expand from an expert point of view on this regard. But Chair, I think the challenge we are facing is that in terms of the Constitution, Section 2021, specifically provides that the President must appoint a military commander of the Defence Force. However, the Constitution does not provide any guidelines as to who should constitute that military command. And the Defence Act also does not provide any guidelines as to what is it that is meant by the military command. Now, that's where the interest in this provision is. Our view is the Defence Act should have taken it a step further to define exactly who are we referring to, and what is the intent of that? So the proposal comes from that angle, Chair, to say we need to insert a new clause in the Defence Act, which empowers the President, which clarifies, firstly, who is the command, and how the command should be appointed. And there is a proposal, Chair, that we have, that the command should include the Chief of the Defence Force, principally, and that it should include the Chiefs of Services and Divisions that have a command responsibility in respect of the forces. Now, there is a proposal that we have, Chair, and I think General Ngwebu will be better able to explain as to why the thinking is that we should include limited to the services and the divisions. In conclusion, Chair, it is submitted that the imposition of the obligation to serve on reserve force members shall not negate the principle of voluntarism in the SANS, as the obligation only follows upon voluntary enlistment with the SANDF. The proposed amendment has been carefully crafted so as not to be onerous to the point of discouraging service in the reserve force or to be disruptive to the function of the civil society. The establishment of the Defence Force Service Commission, on the other hand, will also enhance the relationship between the SANDF and the members. will facilitate the timeous improvement of conditions of service and create labor peace. If you look at the history of the Defense Force for the past 10 years, all the salary increments are always implemented because the system was not functioning. So we believe the establishment of the commission, the department will be able to proactively deal with all the issues relating to salaries and other conditions of service. The inclusion of the provision on the military command, on the other hand, may also help to bring certainty on the issue of military command and facilitate the exercise of the president's power in respect of that matter. So it provides that certainty to who is the command and who appoints that command and in what manner the command. And I will hand over, Chair, to General Ngwebe to just speak to the issue. Thank you,
Chair. Don't know if you take over my job. Tatum Ngwebe, give us a view. Tatum Ngwebe does represent the military command, so you give us some background, Chair, about how and you know, how wide you want us to do this amendment. So you speak on behalf of the military command. He's the acting chief of defense at this particular moment.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I think it would be to avoid the redundancy. The presenter has eloquently covered what needs to be covered, and from the department, what has been presented, it indicates our views and position on both the reserve call-up and the military command. So if there are any questions, to allow the Honorable Members to have enough time to engage, will just take questions, more than repeating what has already been said. Thank you, Chair.
No, the President has not satisfied us. You need to be able to tell us during peace, is this infrastructure properly, or during war, is this what is could be able to guide us? If the President is just a legal person, give us a military point of view.
Well, from the military command, or from the military side, we have looked at both during peacetime and during wartime. Of course, one can stretch it, but we felt that in terms of the appointment of the military command and defining the military command as indicated in the Constitution, Section 202, Subsection 1, that if the president must appoint people, you do not necessarily want the president to appoint quite a big number, but you want at least a relative number, which speaks to the execution and the command of the military activities. So the post or individuals indicated there, we felt that they are correct. But one can go beyond that, but I think that one is what is acceptable and as indicated from the department without expressing one's opinion on that. Thank you.
You don't mind, you know, I want you to be very helpful before members engage into it. I can see in one submission, the one that is on the table there, it does bring in the reserve force. What does that relationship mean? Does it help? I mean, I know that there is the reserve force is not full-time. We are doing a contract. I just want to understand so that when members are getting clarity, does that help to consolidate the military command to bring in the reserve force? And in a submission here, you see, it also talks about the role of the ministry versus the president. Can you just give us some clarity? How much work does the military command have in that type of relationship? You see, for us, it's important to distinguish between the minister, the chief of defense, and the president. You can't have everybody lumped together. It might create up tensions. It might not be clear who's appointing who. Just give us clarity about those issues.
The military command will be, according to the Constitution, appointed by the president. Now, then to define it, then you look at the chief of the defense force as at least the commander, and then you will have the four services, which is the army, which is the air force, the navy, and the military health, being part of that command, which must also be appointed by the president. And then you'll have the chief of the defense intelligence, because he also plays a role when then war must be waged in providing the necessary services to the command. As the same, at the end of the day, your chief of operations would then conduct those operations on behalf of the chief of defense force, and as the main person in terms of putting together the forces required for that eventuality, depending on the situation on the ground. Then that's where then the chief of operations comes in. Thank you.
Quite clearly, it's going to raise our interest, and we're still going to discuss with you. Can we have Dr. Matanzima? Dr. Matanzima, he was busy with initiation school. His boy is going for initiation. And again, go see, plan our way of going. Our chieftainship, we don't disturb, but I have to instruct him that Parliament wants him, and Parliament needs him here. So, we should go and get the pies, I do this. Young and look at our one. So, I call it like a good one at that. But if Parliament, you have full nothing to be in there. Go. Your school said that we can go to the Makai.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members, honorable judge and members of the commission. Mine is a small addition. It is an issue that the Secretary for Defense designate has alluded to. And this is about demilitarization of the finance division. Out of that demilitarization, now we have complaints from those people who were soldiers, and after that demilitarization, they are raising concerns, and the Commission is dealing with this issue. But we thought, because we have an opportunity to effect amendments in the Defense Act, we should take this opportunity to indicate that we will be coming back with the full presentation, because one of the complaints is about their inclusion, re-inclusion in the SANDF group scheme. We have a group scheme as soldiers, so that when we die, and then that group scheme, which is underwritten by Sanlam, may pay to the families. So those members are also raising complaints that when they demilitarized to become civilians, that aspect, they lost some status, and they also lost this group scheme. So it is our intention to present to this committee the a small inclusion of an amendment to accommodate that those members should be re-included in the Defense Act so that we can pay them accordingly. We have negotiated this with the underwriters, and they see no problems if we can effect some changes in the Defense Act. So this is a small portion that we would like to include. It is not properly prepared now because it was not previously there. And until such time that the members presented to the Commission, and also we tried to address them, they raised this question as one of their concerns. So other areas or concerns are being addressed. They don't need an amendment in the Defense Act. So this one specifically would like the members, when we come back, to support this so that we can address the members' consent, and then we finalize their complaints. We will submit accordingly. Thank you, sir.
General Anderson, do you have anything to comment about the reserve force before we start taking questions from members?
Chairperson, I think it's been adequately discussed. Perhaps I could just give support to the fact that the Defence Reserve Board, which I chair, and the Reserve Force Council that are also represented here, fully support this legislation. We have consulted. Perhaps there are two dimensions that haven't been considered. Why is this in the...
I've got some older delegation in my members of Parliament. Just make sure that you speak towards the mic so that they can...
Let me move closer. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes.
Right. Chairperson, just to confirm then, we have consulted. The Defence Reserve Board, which I chair, which consists mainly of reserve members, supports it, and the Reserve Force Council supports it. Perhaps I could just add two dimensions. Well, first of all, flavour. To give you an idea of the scope of the call-up of reserves, we called up last financial year, 13,500 reserves. As we sit here today, we've got reserves in the Sudan, two companies, and we've got reserves on the border. But just two dimensions, which perhaps I could give a flavour. Why is this in the interest of the reservist? What's in it for the individual? I would argue three things. It gives the individual certainty. It also gives the individual a legal basis to go to an employer and say, I have been called up and I'm obliged to answer the call-up. And I would also argue it's going to give the individual more opportunities, because the Defence Force will invest more in the reserves if we know it's a guaranteed force. And perhaps my last comment, Chairperson, is, you know, when you hear 1 year jail for not responding to a call-up, one gets concerned. But just to remind your committee and yourself, there is a section on the Act providing for exemption or deferment. There's an independent board that will sit and consider cases. So if there is a call-up and the person has a family crisis or legitimate excuse, there is a structure within the Act to defer the call-up to a later date. And we will obviously, if this legislation is approved, dust off the regulations to make sure they're up to date. Thank you, Chairman.
Yeah.
You can hear, members. This is the presentation. Is there any other member would want to have some clarity now? I'm giving it over. It's not conclusive. Today it was needed to, it's our preliminary session to bring it to your own attention that the three bills is in front of you now in Parliament. This is the kickoff of the process. So you can ask, but don't conclude today. Give yourself another opportunity to reflect on the process, and you'll have your time in August to finalize the final process. But of now, it's open to you to reflect and engage into the issues that are in front of you. It is about the Reserve Force, it is about the Service Commission, and it is about the Military Command. These are where the amendments are. There's no call-ups. I know generally seen that we are arranging some call-ups. There's a crisis in the country. No, there's no call-ups. It is really just to put the legislation in place. Is there any member who would want to have a question or clarity? David, the first one. Any other member? You would have to sit. General, you would have to shift a little bit. I don't see the lady there. Come more clear. So that I have you on one side. I want to see. Okay. Can I start with you, Mamunda Beni? I'll just start with Mamunda Beni. Okay. And then I come.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is just a clarity on the representative from the Military Command. What is currently, how is it composed? What's the composition of the Military Command currently? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My first question is covered by General Anderson reassuring us that there is, in fact, provision in the Act for exemption. The presenter presented the legislation and used plenty of terms like compelled to serve and not bothering with the whims of the individual. He sounded at one stage a little bit like Marshal Zukov, which was of concern, but I am covered by General Anderson. I'd then like to come to the Commission, and my first question in respect of the Commission is, and I've made this point before in committee, I mean, the President expressed himself very clearly on the 21st of September 2010 about the question, I apologize, 21st of September 2009, the President expressed himself on the question of military unions and said that he had taken a position in favor of the de-unionization of the military. Now, given the fact that this bill does away with, for example, the bargaining council, is this commission is this part of the plan to de-unionize the military? And if it is not, how will the commission interact with military unions? That's the first question. The second question, the Secretary of Defense designate used the term overzealousness in drafting. Now, the drafters seem to have forgotten two important institutions in their drafting. One, they forgot the President, But more importantly, they forgot, it seems to me, they forgot Parliament. What role do you envisage that Parliament will play in the selection of commissioners, in the reporting process, and in the processes of the commission? And then the last question is in respect of the military command. I see that there's a variance between the presentation and the document that we were presented with. And the variance is this. Somewhere between this document being presented to us and the presenter carrying out the presentation, I see that the Chief of Defense Intelligence and the Chief of Reserves made it onto the list and are now included in the military command and will in future be appointed presumably by the President. I wonder if we could explain how these two individuals have suddenly made it onto the list and what the thinking behind that was. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much, Comrade Chairperson. Comrade Chairperson, before I'm asking a question, and you are talking about Matanzima, you know, when you are talking about this mountain school, you touch me somewhere. And because I've been there in 1965. And it's very, very, very important. And well, some people are saying it's not the right thing to do, but if you, you read on Genesis 17:1-7:1, is where you're going to find this mountain school. Because Abraham, when he's going to school there, he was about 800 years there. Thanks very much, you touched me somewhere with my life. And Chairperson, you know, I just found out here. The Third Force member currently serves on voluntarily. You know, I just found out, Chairperson, because sometimes when you ask people, well, of course, I'm in rural area, where sometimes you find people in the clinic, whatever, where they say we are just voluntarily. Who will pay you? Nobody pay me. I just voluntarily. But I just find out also this reserve force. Also, they just do the work without pay, or they get something on that. Thank you very much.
I'm not sure why we should still refer to the Secretary for Defense, Mr. Mpofu, as the Secretary designate. We were told that in June she will be a full-fledged Secretary. We won't discuss that. Yeah. But Comrade Chairperson, I may not have understood or heard this properly. And I thought I got the impression, sorry for my voice, yeah. With regard to the appointment of the commission, the DFSC, I don't know whether I understood correctly. See, at the moment, the suggestion here is that the appointment should be made by the minister. I thought earlier the secretary designate said no. We want to amend this so that the appointment is made by the president. Did I understand that correctly? Because if the appointment is made by the president, I fully agree with that. I support that. Is it okay? The appointment.
What are about doubtful? But if negative because the parliament of course, we must make that decision. Who does the appointment? We'll go into it. But that is a suggestion. That is in front of us. Dr. Mazir.
Thank you, Chairperson. One would appreciate the fact that at last we have came to this conclusion that we have to legislate the reserve force. But the question that I would like to ask, it's related to the response of former Umkhonto we Sizwe, ABLA, and so forth, in terms of serving in the reserve force. Whether do we have them coming in their numbers? Do we have a problem?
I'll give you now a chance to answer. You know, I still don't want to, following up to what Utata is raising, in terms of who would do, give us a sense, secretary designate, that why it seems to be the president of the ministry. Just give us more information. But also, you know, I don't understand, why do we have to legislate? I'll tell you why I'm going to, the intervention by minister. I don't know why do we want us to legislate that into law. You know, when we write the law, we need to be very careful. Also, when we set them, we don't want by decree of law to give certain powers to ministers. Ministers keeps on changing over time, and they've got different personalities. And when you give them too much power, they can also become a little bit abusive. So this type of intervention given to this by law to the minister, why do you want us to do that? Even Tatu Nsigalame can try to give us. He knows the law more better than me. Why do you want us to give that power? Do you think that we are going to have a commission that is rebellious, that is lazy? We should be proactive or preemptive to those commissioners, and then have a minister that stands around with the shambok to shambok them into line when they are not doing their work. That's the impression that we would have, I mean, that we are getting, that you have to have a minister that sits around and, I mean, whip them into line, you see. Or are you saying to us, these commissioners, we're not listening to the minister, that's why she needs this type of power. I thought that judges are very honorable men, men of integrity, and I think that they can listen. I mean, they're very good people, but why do we need that power of intervention for the ministers? Give us a deeper understanding of that. As I said initially, I'll give. As I said that to Ulando, additionally to what Ustela is asking in terms of the military command, is there an infight amongst you about this appointment? Are you fighting there? Why do you really want us to start working out this power relationship? Because you see, I have said to some of the members, it's important for us to get the insights and the proper understanding what arises, what informs this development after 16 years. Give us a sense so that we know what exactly what we are legislating. Why is this relationship so necessary at this particular moment? That too much time will help us. Give us a sense. Na better than a military command, or the situation is, yeah. Why, man, it's after 16 years, you can look at the room, sell it, but the pattern is not going to share. Baruna Mamili is the chief of defense, or the guys in the service, Baruna Mamili that needs the minister or the president to look over his shoulder so that they can be able to assist us, or assist you guys to be able to work together. Yes, the question arises. The chief of intelligence and chief of the reserve force. Let's get more information. Why do they come? The important thing for members of parliament is to get more clarity so that when they apply their mind in terms of the legislation, they do understand from you people what are asking them to do the legislation. If there's no war, no infighting, but there is a particular political reason, give it to us. That's the plan.
Just a follow-up on what you have said. Ministers, they come and go. On the intervention by the minister. You see, when you look at this gender thing, it's like because today the minister is a she. It says the bill empowers the minister to intervene where she is. I think that needs to be corrected. Thank you.
Kumbulala. As many as you can, I'll give you an opportunity to answer. And that you can you open up the microphone, Canada?
Yeah. Come to our room.
David, give him the mic next to you.
I was also surprised that there's this reformulation of structures after 15 years. But connected to the question you asked is, you know, I thought it shouldn't be typical for militaries in South Africa, we a new state, to be formed, because, I mean, we've got such a rich experience of wealth. Military, some bad, some military junta, some good, and therefore I would like to ask, this structure that you coming up with, is there a model in the world? I mean, we're not just copycats, we just take things blindly, but rich experiences through your research can show that this type of a structure has been used in a particular country and it has been used successfully. It is more effective than any other. I'm just saying, are we drawing from wealth experience? Because, you know, human beings are the same, they behave the same, and so on and so forth. And if you draw from those that have done what you want to achieve, you are able to say, well, this has been done. It isn't just theory. It has been put into practice. It has been it has worked now, or is it that unique to South Africa? If it is unique, that is where the chairman's question is going to arise. Why is it unique to South Africa? But I'd like to know where you draw it from.
Madam Secretary Designate, you decide who answers this question, but it's all yours.
Honourable Chairperson, thank you very much. Chair, can we, in responding to questions, just divide them amongst ourselves? The military command will be responded to by General Mgwebi and General Matanzima to support. That includes the last question about the best practice issues. And between myself and the legal people, will deal with the questions of the Commission. Chair, some of the questions were comments, and we take them to be that, particularly the comment by the Honourable Member Mlangeni about the role of the President. Utatu Mlange. I thought I would do the correct thing and say what I'm required to say.
No, Utatu Mlangeni. Honorable Tatu Mlange.
Honorable Tatu Mlange.
Yeah, don't want you to lose your job.
The first issue relates to the issue of de-unionization in relation to the Commission. And noting particularly the articulation by the President on this particular matter, we would perceive the Commission as taking forward the process, and not the process of de-unionization. I don't think there's a direct relationship. But the Commission would be taking on responsibilities of assisting the Minister, particularly, to deal with the matters of service, conditions of service in the Defence Force. I would assume that in the course of conducting their functions, and this is a matter that we have not prescribed in the legislation, they would consult stakeholders that they deem fit to consult.
Yeah, just a thank small addition. You know why I is asking that question?
Yeah.
You see, by the Constitution, the President is the chief of
Commander-in-Chief. Yeah.
Now, you know, in terms of the military, it seems that the man who makes the law. So you pick as you answer that question, just clarify that to us, that when the Commander-in-Chief has spoken, what does this thing imply? Is that David didn't want to be quoted? That's how he always puts it.
Oh, I see.
That the Commander-in-Chief has spoken,
What do we say, Mr. Speaker?
Well, from where we sit, Chair, once the Commander-in-Chief has spoken in relation to this matter, his word is final. The issue around engagement of stakeholders, however, by the Commission is a matter that the Commission will continue to deal with. And they will consult all everybody in society that they deem fit to consult in order to be able to inform. But the word of the Commander-in-Chief is final with respect to this matter. The second share is the issue about the role of Parliament. We have taken cue, Chair, from what we were attempting to achieve from a policy perspective, which is the establishment of a National Defence Force Service Commission that is similar to the Public Service Commission as it is. So we've been guided by what happens in the environment of the Public Service Commission, but I must indicate that the two are not identical. Firstly, the Public Service Commission is established by the Constitution, not an act. The act that exists elaborates and gives the detail of the functioning, and the Public Service Commission Act gives the functioning of that commission. But in essence, the origination of it is in the Constitution. On our commission, the commission is basically established by this amendment that you will put in place here. And because it is sectoral and specific, it will not be derived from the Constitution, unless we're wanting a constitutional amendment, which is unlikely to be the case.
Can I just check one thing again? Is it not by before that injunction of that regulation, was it not by the Constitutional Court that made that type of mandate for us to work with the Union within the India? I'm just trying to find out what does that court judgment say in terms of that? What does it imply? It seems as if, you say something about it, which you call about it, that court judgment. But also, why I'm raising that constitutional judgment, it's important for us as we're doing this legislation that we don't push it aside, because it will be sending a wrong signal to society that we are undermining the Constitutional Court. If the Constitutional Court was the one that gave us the instruction to do the bargaining council, how do we move away from that? And what is the department saying in relation to that Constitutional Court judgment? Because we should not ignore it at all. We are lawmakers. On our side, I was going to say to members of Parliament, you read that Constitutional Court judgment, you then relook at the proposals by the department. If we had to go and ask for rescinding from the Constitutional Court, we'd have to do that. We can't, given the level of how we relate to each other, the judiciary, and the fact that our own state is put on the Constitutional Court, we should not ignore it at all. But give us a sense of how to work around that particular one.
Chair, on that specific question, I'll ask Advocate Miguel to deal with that Constitutional Court decision. And I'm sure the General Ngwebi as well will add on that matter. Or should I allow them now, Chair, to deal with that matter specifically? Then we can proceed with the other. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think you are correct. You are correct. The source of our problem is the source of the problems we're encountering was the Constitutional Court judgment of 1999. And the judgment was based on the interpretation of Section 23 of the Constitution. And the Constitutional Court reached a conclusion that soldiers or members of the defense force are workers within the context of Section 23. And therefore, they are entitled to associate in terms of that section. So to that extent, you are correct. But I think what should be said, Chair, is the bill before you does not prohibit unions, or does not ban unions, or does not deunionize. But it creates a system for the department to be able to consider and provide for the members of the defense force. Now the relevant question, Chair, which you are raising, is how the two are going to coincide in practice.
Now, in the bill, it specifically says the commission, in doing its work, will consult the members of the Defence Force. It's one stakeholder that they have to be consulted. As to the form of that, of those members, it's not prescribed. But the commission, in doing its work, must go out and speak to the members of the Defence Force. Whether those members come in the form of association is another matter. But I think there is no issue of the constitutionality of this bill in as far as it may be prohibiting union, because it does not. It may be one step towards that, but we have not reached that point. And it's a matter that I think is receiving its attention internally within the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think Mr. Nshigela has almost covered all, except to just to add to say, because the Sound Court never intended and never said that there will be unions, but it said the department set up mechanism to manage labor relations within the department. That does not presuppose trade unions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I was in the process of just describing the similarities but also the differences between this particular commission as envisaged and the Public Service Commission. And as a result of which, Chair, we have not tried to duplicate, because of the scale and the size, all the arrangements. Yet we are proposing that, in fact, the authority of this commission must be similar to that of the Public Service Commission, so that in exercising its duty to this specific sector, it is not seen to be a lesser commission by any means. The issues relating specifically to the role of Parliament, Chair, in the bill as it is proposed in Section 62H, we quite clearly outline what we see as the role of Parliament, including a requirement for the Minister to, as soon as practically possible after receipt of the report contemplated in subsection 1, cause a copy of the report to be lodged with Cabinet and tabled in Parliament. So we see a very important reporting role of this Commission to Parliament through the Minister. We have not, Chair, included a role for Parliament in the selection process, and that is a matter that partly reflects proposals that were on the table in relation to the responsibilities of Parliament, but I would suggest it may also similarly partly reflect this relationship about the Constitution versus the bill and the lower level, realistically, in the selection of this commission versus the other. The other one quite clearly stipulates the role of Parliament in relation to the national one, the role of provincial legislatures in relation to the provincial representatives that are served. We do not have such a requirement because we will not be appointing provincial representatives at all, and therefore the legislature would not play a role in this particular instance. So that's what is envisaged in the bill, a reporting requirement rather than a participatory requirement in the selection process. Chair, the question about why we want to legislate the minister's role in overseeing the performance of the commission similarly relates to this separation we're wanting to create between the role of the minister and the president. We are quite clear, Chair, that we cannot, even if he is commander-in-chief, bestow upon the president the responsibility of administering this commission. Firstly, because typically the president would not have the capacity to do so. But secondly, that responsibility of administering the commission, monitoring its performance, reviewing its mandate, seeing that reports are submitted, is then the responsibility of the minister, because remember, this particularly is a commission that relates to a particular sector, and the sector is the Defence Force. So by definition, Chair, the minister is seen as playing a role after the president has facilitated the appointment. All matters relating to appointment that relate to replacement of members and all other things are assigned or are proposed to be assigned to the president, and the minister is then responsible to ensure effective functioning of the commission, including by certain section that relates to appointing people and staff to assist the commission to conduct its work. And all of those responsibilities, if you read them collectively, provide the minister with the ability to monitor the performance of the commission, take reports from them, assist them with whatever they need in terms of their functions, and really provide the administrative functions which the president normally would not be able to. So I think that's the rationale. And I'm not sure whether we would argue that it enables the minister to abuse her power, but in essence, that power cannot be vested on the president, because the president would not be familiar with the operations of the commission enough to arrive at a determination whether they are performing well or they need to be reviewed or otherwise. So I would suggest, Chair, that would be the policy intention, is to allow the minister to be able to, including, in fact, the important issue about presenting their reports to Parliament and to Cabinet on a regular basis, and be able to intervene just in the event that the performance, I guess, is not in accordance to what the requirements of the Act are. Chair, I would confirm that this does not necessarily question in advance the integrity of any commissioner. It doesn't, Chair. It is not intended to question whether the commissioners are not entrusted with the responsibilities before them or otherwise.
Can I just get clarity? Do you mean that General Olumisa has been able to perform in Parliament and the Commission?
Chair, as I stand before you here, Chair, the commissioners indeed have performed excellently.
Secretary Designated, I want you to also speak a little bit about this thing of voluntarism and the Constitution. It's a new question I'm posing. I know you know you. I've had a sense now that the SNDF, the department, they are looking for volunteers in the youth, the voluntarism there. Can you just speak to this thing of voluntarism? How far does it go in the SNDF versus the Constitution? Why I'm asking that, you know, I just want to have a sense that the department have a respect for individual rights. They are also going to deal with the issue in relation to the reserve force. Where does the individual rights stop and end within the India versus the Constitution and the human rights system? Just give us a sense. We just want to see if we're not ending up with a military state. We just want to have a sense.
Chair, if I may venture into this territorial water and suggest two things. One is, in reality, the issue around the reserve force, which I will not discuss, we've already, that has been tabled and discussed, quite clearly indicates that it is not our intention to tamper with the rights of individuals, but it is intended to really enforce and clarify the voluntarism at the point at which a member joins the reserve force. But in order to be able to have a fully effective reserve force, clearly there must be a much more regulated arrangement in terms of effecting much more effective processes within the reserve force, and the procedure has been clarified by General Anderson around the call-up, but also importantly the exemption and deferment as potential exit arrangements under those circumstances. In relation to the National Service, Chair, we also similarly are not suggesting at all that we are going back to conscription or limiting the rights of people in relation to their ability to volunteer. But in the national context of the national service, we're wanting to establish a mechanism that allows for the national defense, or for the defense force, to be able to utilize its vast capacities to assist the country in dealing with a specific challenge which relates to the problem of the youth. Chair, there is the general principle of voluntarism in the context of national service is confirmed. But our analysis internationally is starting to indicate quite clearly that this national service will become a good thing to do for the youth and unavoidable, not compulsory. There is recent studies that I am emanating from the United States and other countries that are indicating that there is a general preference in the employment environment for individuals that have benefited from one sort or another of training around discipline and training in the context of this particular military environment. There is an argument by HR practitioners that, in fact, by definition, you produce a better performer with better work ethics and better levels of discipline. Chair, I think this country alone, in its history, I'm sure those who come from that particular history can also, with all the negative elements of conscription, can demonstrate how the positive elements would have been the culture of establishing discipline and getting higher levels of productivity from individuals that go through that program. So, Chair, I think it becomes important for us to keep protecting the enshrined right for voluntarism amongst, well, in the context of our society. But that does not preclude government from finding appropriate interventions to enhance, using state resources, by the way, which are available at our disposal, and enhance our own capabilities of producing yet a better citizen who can participate in this democracy, fully exercising their rights, but giving opportunities for a level of training and capacity development that has not existed in the recent past. So importantly for us, we would see this as one initiative in the national service that we do, not on our own, Chair. We now are forging a partnership with the Minister of Higher Education. Importantly, to be able to utilize the facilities that are available in the higher education environment, but also the Minister of Basic Education, in order to prepare these individuals to go into national service after their basic education. And as such, say, in that environment, we're absolutely certain that we'll be able to create a mechanism that removes the sense of hopelessness, provides support to all our citizens who fall within that category and age group, access to basic training irrespective of their race, color, creed, and importantly in the South African context, class. Thank you, sir.
We'll definitely come back to you after this Bafana Bafana fever and see how young people are behaving. You still have to give us an elaborate presentation around that as Parliament. I was just asking for the sake of the broad concept around voluntarism, but the total briefing, we are patiently waiting for you to be ready to come and give us a presentation around that. Can I proceed now? I just wanted to get the military command to clarify some of your questions, and I'll give Mr. Anderson, and then I'll finally give the legal department. But members of Parliament, it's not your last. Okay, you'll have it again and again. It is not that, but I'll give you a last round before we go. Tatu Ngwe.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. The concept of military command is not unique to South Africa, and it is not new. It's been there, it's been defined. But the question then arises, why are we talking about it now? I think for us within the military, we've got an understanding which says, like all organizations, there must be a top management. And our top management is defined as military command. But our mechanism to administer, manage, command and control the military, we've got presently, which has been there since 1994, a mechanism which is called Military Command Council, and it's got its own constitution, and it's got members. So it's not a new thing. The challenge and where this definition comes in is that when we read the constitution, as been indicated in the presentation, section 202, subsection 1. That mandates the president to appoint the military command. Now, in the understanding from the presidency presently that it tended to speak to one person, so which is not necessarily the case, and we had to look at that. And it emanated from the appointments that had to be made. And this, when we came to understand the shortcomings of the Constitution and the legislation in terms of the Defense Act, that there is an absence of this definition. Hence, then, it was felt to close the gap which has been identified lately, we need to define this military command, which is not defined anyway. Now, the composition, honorable members, if we go to our presentation or hard copies given in terms of page 8, in terms of the slide 16, we'll see all the people who are mentioned there. But those who are mentioned there are mentioned there because it has been felt by the department these are the ones which must be appointed by the president. Now, in terms of why the Chief of Defense Intelligence and Chief of Defense Reserve were not there, the debate can go on and who's supposed to be in and who's supposed to be out. And lately we have agreed that if you're looking at operational perspective, there is just no way that you can conduct any war without intelligence. Therefore, if you must plan your operation, then you must have intelligence. Therefore, your Chief of Defense Intelligence must be part of that team. That's the logic. And if you want to give a sense of comfort from those who are members of the reserve force, you do not want them to begin to believe that there is no sort of association through the Chief of Defense Reserve. Hence, then you find the person there, because when you go to war, you are going to mobilize. And you are saying that the reserve forces are part of a force multiplier when the situation demands. And then you want that Chief of Defense Reserve to be part of that command, military command. So that is the response to the question which speaks to the military command. But then if we speak of the military command council, it tends to go beyond the people mentioned here. And that gives then the rest of the other generals can be appointed by the minister, not necessarily by the president, because you don't want the president to appoint everybody in terms of generals, but you want the president to appoint key people in terms of the military command. So that would be the response, Chair.
So, just to get clarity, so you are saying that the military council versus the military command, that appointment, you are satisfied that it is going on very well, that the minister can take care of it. There's no tension. Is that what you're explaining to us?
Well, for us in the military, we work on command. Tension is not necessary, because today we are this, today we are that. We are not speaking to people. We are speaking to posts in the organization. One can be appointed anywhere, anytime, and we move. So it's not, and there are no tensions, and it's not coming from within the military, but it's just a gap in terms of the constitution and the legislation which we are trying to close, but it's not created by any tension among us. Not at all.
So you are not fighting amongst yourselves. That's my time.
We'll lose the war if we start fighting among ourselves. Yeah. Thank you, sir.
We are politicians. You get suspicious about what it is. Tatum Langit. You tatu Matan.
Sir, I'm covered by what Senator Mkwebi has said. But I confirm there are no tensions. We work on commands, and the Commander-in-Chief commands the Defense Force through a cabinet member in terms of the Constitution. So she can deal, or he can deal with those other appointments which are not dealt with by the Commander-in-Chief. So there are no tensions. It's just the gap. Thank you.
So, who's senior now between the two of you? I'm getting confused. I thought that you're taking instructions from the other one. Now, Josie, leave it there. Just put in your leg. Anderson, do you have anything to say to us before I give
Chairperson, there were two questions relating to the reserves. The first one is, do the reserves get paid? I'm pleased to tell you yes. The reserves get the same basic pay as the regular, no discrimination. Obviously, the regulars get certain additional allowances, which makes sense. But the reserves get the same basic pay. When we called up, we get the same medical cover, the same insurance cover, and the same uniform. So there's no discrimination. And if I could just round that one off by saying, when the youngsters get back from their deployments of 6 months on peace support operations, typically they're able to pay off their car or at least half their house. So it's quite lucrative. The second point was, do we have a shortage of volunteers? The answer is no. Just to inform the committee a little bit wider, we currently have 28,500 volunteers in the reserves, and we called up 13,500 last year. We want to grow to 70,000, and we could do it quickly. The problem is there's no sense in building up your reserves too quickly, because then you don't have tasks for them, and then they get disheartened, disenchanted. So we have to do it on an orderly basis. And perhaps if I may just extend the answer a little bit, where do we get these volunteers from? Initially, of course, we took them from non-statutory forces and statutory forces, people who were already trained. We did transfer some of the former commandos on a selected basis into the reserves. But now the main source are the youngsters who do 2 years in the military skills development system. If they're not absorbed in the regular force, then we absorb them in the reserves. And let me hasten to add, we've got about a 60 to 70% success rate in finding them jobs in their civilian lives as well. So there's no shortage of volunteers. So this legislation is not to try and force people in. It's in fact to cater for the future, to have a guaranteed force.
Do you have anything to say? You're fine. We'll take follow-up questions. How many members would want to do follow-up questions? I'll take note of you. I'll give you an opportunity. I'll give you an opportunity at a moment. Is there any other member? Oh, I will have to wait for Runda Ben. She's just gone out. You want to say something before this is out?
I have a request to, if you could allow the state law advisor to just elaborate on this issue about the intervention by the minister. He would like to. He's sitting.
Mm. Oh, with that. Oh, say something. I'll take note. That's it.
Thank you, Chair. Mongameli Kweta is the name from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. Chair, I would like to briefly say something around the issue of the intervention by the Minister. Chair, the idea here, Chair, is not that there is a panic that the members of the Commission will be unruly and create misconduct and not perform their duties properly, effectively, and efficiently. Chair, I think the example, Chair, I would like to make, an extreme example, Chair, in the Constitution, there is an intervention provision, Chair, to remove, for instance, the President because of certain grounds, Chair, that are listed in the Constitution. That's a form of intervention. And when the Constitution was the draft, Chair, there didn't really say that there could be circumstances where this particular provision would be implemented, Chair. And, Chair, in our legislation, Chair, there are many examples where there are commissions and agencies, and there are provisions where the minister or whoever entity may intervene to remove those members or to dissolve the whole entity, Chair, based on misconduct and other issues. Therefore, Chair, the danger, Chair, of not having this particular provision in the legislation, Chair, it will leave a gap, Chair, wherein there's no legal basis for intervening when there is maybe misconduct on the part of the Commission. They will say, in my view, Chair, the clause, Chair, is proper, Chair, and I will submit that, Chair, it should be left in the legislation, Chair.
No, Dr. Kweta, if I can just come in. You know, if you say, if she is still not satisfied, she may replace them or appoint an administrator to take over one or more of their functions. Now, if you go to the Constitution, if you deal with the President, you know that there are mechanisms that are also in the that prepares for a certain particular process
to be followed before you arrive at such a decision. Now here, in this intervention, you know, like if the minister is very angry with you, she can remove you. And there's no other processes that have been put into place to follow. Is that what this intervention is supposed to be saying? That's where the concern will be a little bit coming in. That what are you saying exactly?
I
all understand, but I'm just saying that you're not giving it by law for somebody to get angry and remove another person. You might violate other legislation somewhere else, labor relations and all those things. Talk to it and give us more sense and certainty that this clause is correct.
Thank you, Chair. So you'll note that in the clause itself, the minister does only have a discretionary powers or carte blanche to just remove the members of the commission. The first step that she will have to do, he or she would have to do, is definitely to request the commission member to make a submission, or rather the first step that she will have to do is to direct the members or the commission to make a particular, to take a particular action in order to correct a particular untoward action. She cannot just remove them in terms of the particular clause, just remove the members of the commission. She would have to give them opportunity to make submissions, interrogate the submissions, and then even give them opportunity to correct whatever action they may have done incorrectly. And the dissolution of the commission cannot just be implemented by the minister without any valid reason, because the clause itself does give the commission members an opportunity to make presentation to the minister and show cause as to why they should not be removed. So there are a bit of some guarantees for the minister not to act unconstitutionally.
Continue engaging into that.
There is another issue that I'd like to touch upon.
Yeah.
The issue that was raised regarding the deunionization of the military and all that, and that constitutional court case that was raised. Chair, to agree with Mr. Jigela, the department chair, the bill itself, as it stands, chair, could pass constitutional muster because it does not ban military trade unions as such. Now, sir, the Constitutional Court case, the first case, it was the unions, or rather the members of the Defence Force, were challenging an Act of Parliament, an Original Defence Act, that the court stated that it was unconstitutional because it prohibited members of the Defence Force to belong to any trade union or to organize and be a structure to deal with their labor issues. And then that act was declared unconstitutional by the Constitutional Court. And then the Section 23 of the Constitution was interpreted by the Constitutional Court that it does give the right to members of the military to form a union or to belong to a trade union. And to this effect, the Department of Defense made the regulations are giving effect, or rather empowering the members of the trade union to belong to trade unions. So it has the regulations of this stand are still in existence, and the unions are still in existence. The only way around that is to make a constitutional amendment and amend Section 23 of the Constitution. But the bill as it stands, there's no danger of it passing constitutional muster, because it does not stand in trade union as such. Thank you, Chair.
I've got David, I've got Stella, you still on? Okay, you're the last one. And then I'll start with David, I've got Tatum Langen. Is there any other member who've got a question?
It's not a question as such, it's not a new question, but it's the one that they've avoided to respond to. yeah, that of the response of the MK members to the reserve force participation. Thank you, Chair. I am picking up on what the Secretary-Designate said. I look forward to seeing whether our colleague, the Honourable Stella Ndebeni, comes back more disciplined and a better citizen after she finishes her two-week voluntary military training. Chair, I'd like to get back to this question of unions. I mean, in my view, the military union egg dance must now end. The Commander-in-Chief expressed himself on the 21st of September 2009, and the Secretary of Defense Designate has said that his word is final. But for nearly 8 months, there has been no action that at least we know of to deal with military unions. And it strikes me that the departments are, in fact, undermining the President's position. And so my question is simple. Does the department have a plan to de-unionize the military? If the department has a plan, what is the plan? And if the department doesn't have a plan, why doesn't the department have a plan? Thank you.
But you showed today that they have come just to introduce a bill. So we have to keep it within the ambit of the bill. Of now, you're venturing into new ground. No, that's be patient. I'm also sharing. It's because now you're asking them to deal. I thought that would remain on the broad question of deunionization and the implication of the bill itself, rather than entering in what they have not been able to do over this particular period. I don't want to encourage them to start entering into that. I don't want unions to feel that this is becoming a bashing area for us to deal with them. Let's leave that question now. Unless you want to put it totally different. Okay.
Chair, I mean, my question stands. And I believe that the question is justified given that the legal advisor said, if I quote him correctly, that the establishment of this commission will go some way to de-unionize the military. So the question, in my view, ought to stand. But of course, I will accept your ruling.
No. I'm not conclusive. I'm a Democrat, so I'll allow the legal people to exercise their legal mind again and re-explain themselves in how they are approaching that. Dr. Mlange.
We are bringing up all these controversial points of the... You spoke of the judgment of 1999. I was a bit puzzled. Why does this come in? Then you brought in the issue of the view of the secretary on the question of voluntarism. All those things were not part of our discussion yet. But you see, Mr. Committee Chairperson, don't stop me. Don't stop me. Yeah, I can see you're trying to press your button there. You see, if you bring in the question of the judgment of 1999, and where you are saying that the Constitutional Court referred to the soldiers as workers, it obviously meant that they should have a right to form a trade union or join trade unions. I cannot for my life see a soldier belonging to a trade union myself. You can imagine, Committee Chair, if South Africa was at war with another country and we are calling, mobilizing everybody to support the war effort, our soldiers will be fighting. And then you get the trade union saying, no, our members are not going to participate in this war. Where will South Africa be? Now, don't bring in those questions. They are very sensitive. In fact, personally, I don't want a trade union in the army. And secondly, hopefully, we want to see the legislature working harmoniously, peacefully with the judiciary. There shouldn't be any fight. If the legislature violates the act, the judiciary obviously will say, this thing is unconstitutional. Now, we want to avoid such things. So that, hopefully, this commission will act as a union. Union, spokesperson, organ of the soldiers. But not to be a union. You see, now how we are going to solve this problem of complying with the constitution that people have rights. Bill of Rights provides for everybody. People have rights to do certain things. We must find a way of getting these things working together. You see what I mean, Chairperson? We must find a way of having the law provides protection to the soldiers as well. You see, I'm losing my point, but I'll stop there. I'm losing the point I wanted to make.
You've really made a good point. You've not lost it. You've set up substantially where we are moving from. In fact, that's why this legislation is in front of us, is to find that balance between their own rights as individual soldiers and what the broader society is going through. And I'm confident with your views that we'll be able to find that balance even amongst ourselves here in how we're going to make this legislation work for everybody within the assembly. Mamustela.
Thank you, Sir Person. Mine is just to thank the department for the initiative that they have taken on the military skills development program and the voluntary program that you were talking about. We would like to, as young people, to thank them for taking an interest in making sure that they are contributing towards the building and development of a healthy society through the future generations of the country. As young people, we are ready to be trained. We are ready to receive command, but only if it seeks to make us better people, so that we are able to run this country effectively, because we are going to lead. Thank you.
And to close now.
I'd like to just make a comment, Chair. This is not a question, and it's not related to military unions. I've made my point, and I hope that I get an answer. The policy dilemma that we're dealing with, or that this legislation arises out of, is the question of service conditions within the military. Now, we sit with the situation that our portfolio committee, through no fault, and I must say this, of the interim commission, through no fault of the interim commission, has read in the media that there are problems with service conditions, have read in the media that there are problems with salaries within the Defence Force. But we have never been briefed on the problem of service conditions within the Defence Force. So we are in part legislating to solve a problem that we have never been briefed on and don't understand. And my hypothesis would be that the Service Commission will go some way to assisting in solving the problem with service conditions in the Defence Force. But there will have to be several other interventions. I mean, my hypothesis would be, even if there was a perfectly functioning Service Commission and Military Bargaining Council, that would not solve the service condition problem in the Defence Force. It might go some way to solving it. So I think what we need is a full and comprehensive briefing on the service condition problem by the department, which includes as the base documents both interim reports of the interim service commission, which the minister up until now has refused to release.
Thank you.
We will attend that David. As I said, we'll give the Service Commission the whole day to take us through all the different the issues that they've come up with. And as I've said, I've not just persuading, because if we're persuading Parliament, but we don't want to use harsh words. We are just saying that the SecDef designate must make sure that that reports are available to us with the Ministry so that we could be able to prepare for the presentation of the Interim Commission and in context, put in context what is in front of us. David is right at one part that if we don't have that information, we might legislate ourselves something that we don't know what are we helping with. You see. So the information that we have that has been provided by the Service Commission will help us to go some way in understanding what is exactly going on. You must understand that these are politicians. They don't sit in the barracks, so they don't know the conditions of what goes on in the barracks. The department can tell us more better what goes on and why do we need to have this balance. And as that season is concluded, comment, which is a very substantial comment, that we must find the balance dealing with the conditions and also acknowledging that we don't want to unionize the SNDF. Now, if you give us the information, we'll be very helpful with that, you see. But if you don't give us the information, we might not understand what are you asking us to legislate for. But I must say so, that from where members are seated in majority, they have a sense that they don't want to unionize SNDF. There's quite a clot. I mean, members don't want it. You might be between the road, but I know from talking and different expressions. So the legislation, they will read it totally different from how the department is seeing it. But we will work very hard to make sure that we do find that. We will allow those that claim to be to represent unions to come into representation at some stage. We won't allow them not to say any word to us. I'll allow them to come and express their own point of view so that you could understand the balance effect when we finalize the legislation itself. Can I give the department and the legal department also to say the last words, and then from there on we'll close. Members of Parliament, you are finished now. I'm just giving that on this side so that we could be able to say we're finished.
Thank you, Chair. There isn't much to say. I think one doesn't want to be misquoted or, as politicians would say, quoted out of context. I started by saying this bill does not prohibit unions, does not ban unions. But it may be a good step towards that. So I just need to put that clear. And I'm not in a position to engage in the debate with regard to unions because there are certain pronouncements that still have to be made in that respect. So I wouldn't take it any further than that. And I will leave to designate to take it forward.
Honourable Chairperson and honourable members, it is
Secretary designate. The next round will come back here. I don't know that Mlange need to start asking this question. When are you becoming full time? Yes. Okay. No, what can you do? I mean, if the minister says so, what must I do?
Chairperson, just on that issue we've just faced, I'm not supposed to be in this room, which is why the designate thing remains. I'm supposed to be away in the United States. I'm not, and that's why we have this issue. It's nothing more than that, Dr. Mlange. We just have a little technical glitch. The issues, Chairperson, that have been, or the questions that have been posed to us, Chairperson, throughout this meeting, have been quite useful, in fact, in pointing us to the type of discussion we will have and the issues that are likely to arise in the public hearings, but more so in the detailed discussion, even the clause-by-clause deliberations we will have with yourselves. We will adequately prepare ourselves to be able to respond to some of the key strategic policy questions that are being asked and make sure that we are in a state of readiness to engage with yourselves. So we would like to thank the members for the questions and know that we've now started a process that will enable us to move forward. If there are issues that require further elaboration, as the normal process of legislation in Parliament allows, we'll be bringing in amendments to cater for the various elements with the assistance of the state law advisors, we'll make sure that we end up with a piece of legislation that serves our people well and serves this country. Chair, just two issues. The issue around unionization, I think you have closed the matter incorrectly. So, but I would like to remind members of this very committee, I was fortunate to attend the first committee meeting that I attended, at which the minister quite clearly had a long list of items she had agreed with the committee she would be engaging the committee on. That agenda, Chair, in your presence, was rearranged and matters were prioritized, and this matter was on that list. So the minister committed to a process around this matter with yourself, and I would just like to remind the committee that that engagement is still to come, subject to other arrangements that you make with the minister about following up on those issues and concluding your engagement with her on this particular matter. The second, Chair, is in that very meeting, I would also recall that the minister clearly articulated the issue about the report. The report of the commission to the minister, and that she would exercise her mind about the availability or otherwise of that report. So I think on both these matters that seem to be a little bit outstanding as we conclude our session, we will truly be guided by the minister on those matters, as she had confirmed in that committee meeting that was held where she was present and articulated herself on these two matters. Chair, on that basis, would like to thank the honorable members of the committee and yourself, honorable chairperson, for what has been a very valuable engagement with yourself on this, the start of the process of consideration of the amendment bill. We look forward to further engagements, including the public hearing, which will help us to conclude this legislation.
A good wish to us. Go and watch Bafana Bafana. I don't have tickets, so don't look at me, sir. I know you're looking for tickets. I've got my flag, sir. I'm wavering already. Thank you, members.